Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Today, Wednesday, February 12th, the anniversary of the birth of the great emancipator Abraham Lincoln, is the 532nd day of war. This morning, our staff in England is first to report. Go ahead, London.
This is London at about 2 p.m. John McVane speaking. British planes bombed Hanover again last night. Targets in Bremen and other places in northwest Germany were also attacked. Because of bad weather, operations are said to have been on a considerably smaller scale than on Monday night. A few bombs were dropped by German raiders last night in south and southeast England. Some houses were damaged and a few people were injured. Despite denials both in Berlin and Sofia, reports persist that under one guise or another, the infiltration of German troops into Bulgaria is taking place. Dispatches reaching London from Belgrade this morning say that over 1,000 German planes are reported to have arrived in Bulgaria up to yesterday, and that most Bulgarian aerodromes have been occupied by Nazi ground staffs. Some tanks are believed to have been brought down the Danube and landed in Bulgaria. Although they could not confirm that the Germans are attempting to high-pressure the Greek government into patching up a quick peace with Italy, Greek diplomatic sources in London today said that such a move would have absolutely no chance of success. Now we are in the struggle, we shall remain in it, one Greek diplomat said. There is no possibility of compromise. The Greek legation here as yet has no indication of whether any American war supplies have actually reached Greece. The Greeks appreciate the talk of help to Greece that is going around in America, and it seems probable that if they had some promise of the immediate dispatch of war supplies, it would strengthen their hand in dealing with the Germans. Free French headquarters in London today still have no confirmation of the Vichy report that Free French troops have taken the Italian town of Gadames in Libya. It's very possible that some of the troops under Vagon have swung over to De Gaulle and acted on their own hook, but the possibility is not being overlooked that the report may have originated in German-dominated French propaganda sources in Paris. The idea behind the report, according to this theory, would be to frighten Marshal Pétain into thinking he could no longer control his own men. Such a raid, blamed on the Free French, would give Laval and his followers the complaint that the Vichy government couldn't protect the French colonies and openly cooperated with the Free French in allowing them to attack Axis territory. This would be used as a talking point for Laval and Germany to demand that Laval be given control of the Vichy government. British military experts today are pointing out that the Allied blows at Axis policy in the Balkans and the Mediterranean are causing Axis propaganda to lose much of its power in the capitals of Europe and Asia. As these experts see it, Hitler now has his choice of 7 lines of action. Briefly tabulated, they are 1, a thrust through Bulgaria at Turkey and Syria to attempt to grab the Iraq oil supply, Germany's most pressing need. 2, a parallel invasion through Salonika to the Suez Canal. 3, an occupation of Italy that might close the central Mediterranean. After taking control of Sicily, the Germans would try to force Pétain to give up Bizerta across the straits on the African coast. 4, the Germans may try to move to the ports on the south coast of France and demand from Pétain use of the French warships to support the blocking of the Sicilian Narrows. 5, a thrust into Spain to close Gibraltar and separate the Middle Eastern army from contact with Britain. 6, an increase of submarine warfare to cut off American supplies from Britain. And 7, the invasion of Britain itself. As the British see it, preparations for this last are continuing in spite of the intensified German pressure in the East. It's pointed out here that Hitler may try all of these courses at the same time, then give up those that seem too difficult, and concentrate on the lines along which he can see the possibility of success. The British believe that Europe won't be able to get through another winter without food supplies from outside, since stocks are being killed off to supply present needs. This factor, it's thought, will force Hitler to strike at Britain before next winter. Otherwise, it's believed, Hitler would be forced by the danger of starvation in the occupied countries and a general collapse of the peoples in the territory he controls. Now, here are some of the unimportant things that are happening today in London. Things that are unimportant when you're thinking in terms of world diplomacy, but things that nevertheless round out the picture of wartime Britain. Old beds are bringing high prices in London. When the government appealed for scrap metal, many people gave up their old beds. Then they realized they could use the frames and mattresses in the shelters at night. So now they're hunting around the second-hand shops for beds like the ones they gave away. Psychologists are going into the war factories to help speed up the training of workers. The psychologists claim that by use of psychological methods, they can train people in 4 or 5 days to do work that they'd ordinarily need the same number of weeks to learn. It was announced today that the Shakespeare Festival will be held as usual at Stratford-on-Avon this spring. The first performance will be of Much Ado About Nothing on April the 12th, around what may be invasion time. This is John McVane in London, returning you to the National Broadcasting Company in New York.
From the Associated Press, this dispatch from Bern, Switzerland. Spain's Generalissimo Francisco Franco met Premier Mussolini somewhere in Italy today, according to foreign diplomatic reports. Next, the news the censors will pass our staff reporter in Germany.
Hello, NBC. This is Theodor Knaut speaking from Berlin. We have heard it said on the best of authority, namely on that of Winston Churchill and Adolf Hitler, who on this point at least seem to be in agreement, that the war will not be won in the Mediterranean, but that the decision will fall in English waters and in the air over the island. Nevertheless, the latest developments in the Mediterranean, the capture of Benghazi by the British and the appearance of a British squadron before Genoa on Sunday morning, have directed attention to that part of the world and to the position of the contending forces there. The Frankfurter Zeitung today quotes Italian sources as saying that a strong Italian naval detachment was actually cruising off the coast of Sardinia when the British bombarded Genoa, and that it at once endeavored to cut the British off, but was unable to locate them because of fog in which the British escaped after their raid. Nevertheless, Italy's position is much in the limelight just now, also because of the reported meeting between Mussolini and General Franco, comment on which, however, is withheld in official circles here. The rumor that Franco brought with him a peace offer from Britain to the Italians is described here as being the best joke of the century. British planes again appeared over Germany last night, but it is said here they were driven off by German flak artillery before they could do any damage, and the random bombs that they dropped merely caused some fires and deaths and injuries to the civil population. In a raid on Calais, the British are said to have lost 3 planes, and 5 more are added to the heavy casualty list of the day before, bringing the number which the Germans claim to have destroyed on Monday to 38 in all. In addition, the Italians say that they brought down 36 British planes in 2 days on all their various fronts, so that according to Axis calculations, the British must have lost 74 machines in all in different parts of the fighting area. On the other hand, the Germans are prompt to deny the allegations of Winston Churchill that they had lost 50 Stuka planes in their attacks on Malta, with 40 more destroyed on the ground for a total of 90 Stukas out of 150. They say that they lost only 11 planes, of which only 6 were Stukas, so that Churchill, this 68-year-old man who is enjoying his new springtime of the sins of his youth, as the Völkischer Beobachter observes, exaggerated German losses 15 times. The remarks of Wendell Willkie after his return to America come in for comment here, and it is noted that he is speaking with much less assurance than while he was in England, while his answers are found to be evasive, say German observers. His quoted answers to questions are said to have been given only after some hesitation, and he seems to be less sure of his ground than when he was being shown around England. A report that Germany has requested the surrender of the Danish Navy to it is said here to be exaggerated. Nothing more than the loan of a few old torpedo boat destroyers without their armament was asked, so that they may be used for training purposes in the Baltic. Commissar General Dr. Fischbeck in Holland has reassured the Dutch that their wages and their rations will not be worse than those of the Germans. Holland must cooperate loyally with the Germans in fighting the war, and they must not sabotage. The same fate lies before both Germans and Dutch, and so they must make the same sacrifices. Germany is waging this war for Europe, said Dr. Fischbeck. And so Germany will see that, if necessary, Europe gets food from Germany. But all must assist, he adds, in providing Germany with what she needs, even though this means sacrifices for all. I quote from the German paper in the Netherlands. This is Theodor Knaut speaking from Berlin and returning you to NBC.
Earl Godwin is heard next, reporting from our newsroom in Washington.
Good morning. I heard Wendell Willkie yesterday, and I will deny with all I've got what you just heard from Berlin. Willkie did not lack any personal assurance. In fact, it seemed to me as if he had added a little since I last talked to him. And the question all Washington asks at this hour on Lincoln's birthday is, do we give England 5 to 10 destroyers a month, or do we not? And Washington will be asking that question until somebody answers it officially. That was Wendell Willkie's high point. It was just that. It rang the bell in Washington as far as interest goes. Whether it will have a Navy okay today is an interesting question. And not long ago, Frank Knox, Secretary of the Navy, said we could not afford to give away any more destroyers. The 50 old ones we traded for bases were about all that we could stand and still have enough destroyers to fit out the Navy. And privately, high naval officials have told me that we just were not going to give away any more. The president asked about this matter at his press conference yesterday afternoon, which was held while the Senate Foreign Relations Committee was still quizzing Willkie, said he would have to read the testimony ere he would comment. Willkie saw the president late last night, but would not divulge what went on between the two gentlemen with respect to more destroyers for England. The Navy now has 159 destroyers. Schedule is for 15 new ones this year, 45 next. Willkie spoke of a much higher rate of completion by next year, and he may know more than we do. At any rate, it seems impossible to all Washington observers that Winston Churchill has confided alone in Willkie that Britain needs 5 or 10 destroyers a month. This view must have been given to others in the government here, but Mr. Willkie is the first to make it public, and there is no official repercussion against Willkie so far. It's all very interesting. The Senate's Foreign Relations Committee now gets down to business. Hearings closed. The Willkie hearing was the hearing to end all hearings, I can tell you. The committee will now write the bill the way it will be introduced into the Senate for debate, the counterpart of the House Bill 1776. Two of Willkie's proposals do not seem to me at this minute to have enough support to guarantee their appearance in the bill. That is, the limitation on future aid and the restriction of the bill to limit it to Britain, Greece, and Turkey. At present, there are members who think we should not close the door on Bulgaria and Turkey, and that such limitation and restriction might be damaging to the morale in Bulgaria and Turkey at this important and critical moment. Early this morning, Mr. Willkie returned to New York, where tonight, as titular leader of the Republican Party, he leads off in a Lincoln Day address, one of several score which the Republican organization have set as a first annual Lincoln Day affair in many cities. Here in Washington, Tom Dewey is the principal speaker. Senator Taft at Harrisonburg, Virginia, down in the valley of Virginia. And the Dyess Committee, backed by the House uproariously yesterday and given $15,000 to do its work, gets ready today to work on many important leads covering further alleged spy and sabotage work. Martin Dyess himself is under a physician's care this morning, having collapsed in his office yesterday from over-fatigue, said the doctor. At any rate, the House backed up the Dyess Committee uproariously and unanimously, almost, with the exception of 6 votes, whereas there had been some suspicion that there might be a little bit of delay in letting Martin Dyess go ahead. And Earl Godwin says goodbye. That's the news from Washington at this time.
This has been NBC's regular morning roundup of reports from England, Germany, and our own national capital, Washington. Keep tuned to this station for further reports of world news. This is the National Broadcasting Company.